Hi, my name is Nancy Feichtel, and many of you know me. And therefore, knowing that I started ITN Southern Delaware, the Senior Transportation Co-op, you know that my one issue is going to be transportation and traffic today. Even though I'd have many other negative issues with the development relative to the environment and a whole bunch of things like that. But I'm going to talk in terms of traffic. Before I talk the way I was going to talk, I want to answer Mr. Arlette's questions about schools. I used to be the assistant superintendent of CAPE, and then I was the director of Sussex Academy. And I know far too much about bus routes. So the way schools operate is if a child is within 1 mile or 3/4 of a mile, as some limits in some districts, of the school, then they do not have to be provided busing. Now, what they have often done is provide busing because most of our areas don't have sidewalks that go to school and have terrible traffic problems, but they're not required to. But the other thing that I want to call your attention to is none of these developments that are on cul-de-sacs that don't have through roads are you required to bring buses into the development. That's why you see children having to get to the front of the development to get on the bus to go to school. So that's not the point I was trying to make, but I'm answering your question from previously. Also, the reason CAPE has probably not gotten back to talk to anybody about this is they are discovering that they study all these new communities, and very rarely do they produce any children in the school system because that's not who's moving here. And so they don't worry about it, the impact studies, because of who is really buying these places. Now, again, I want to talk to you about traffic. And the reason I want to talk to you about traffic and the way I'm going to talk to you about traffic is with an analogy. You have to forgive me. I used to be an English teacher. I'm going to give you an analogy. Many years ago, when I was in my 20s, I had the same general practitioner every year. And at the time, I weighed 120 pounds. And I would go back year after year, and he would say, Nancy, you put on 1.5 pounds this year, and last year you put on 2 pounds. I'm, well, what's 2 pounds? And he said to me, he said, think of yourself, envision yourself when you're 70. And if you've put on 2 pounds a year, you're going to weigh 250 pounds, and you're going to have severe consequences. Let me tell you about what incremental growth does. So he gave me a proverb, and he said, life by the inch is a cinch, but life by the yard is hard. What we have done in the county that I'm from, Sussex County, is we have incrementally, over a 30-year period, even with comprehensive plans, we have upzoned and allowed developments to come and to come and to come because that is our growth element. We have incrementally made the beach areas almost unlivable due to traffic problems. I'm not fussing at you. My doctor wasn't fussing at me because I put on 2 pounds a year, but there are consequences of continuing to add on, even though these are lovely developments. They are lovely developments, but there are long-term consequences. When I went home and told my dad the doctor story, my dad, who was always giving me a proverb too, said to me, feather by feather, the goose is plucked. Feather by feather, the goose is plucked. And it simply means, step by step, we are endangering ourselves. Let's tell about what has happened in these incremental decisions of upzoning. First of all, Sussex County is not urban in that it has no grid system for roads. Urban areas are on grids. Most areas in Sussex County are cul-de-sacs. And these cul-de-sacs have an entrance in and maybe one or two entrances out, but they have to yield to an existing road, of which we have far too few. So they're all cul-de-sacs. There's not through roads. I'm going to describe where I live. I live on Old Landing Road, the very first 1 mile from Walmart Inn, where Warrington Road meets. In my backyard, I can see the BB Health Clinic, but I can't get there. I can't get there except to pull out on Old Landing Road and get onto 24 and then get there, because no developments have through roads from one development to the next. Grid systems are common in developed areas, not cul-de-sacs. They are all emptying on main roads. And I don't know if the formula, I didn't get the report, but in my calculations, I am guessing that even though you've downsized the original plan, my guess is there will be existing from this one development, exiting or entering daily, approximately 2,800 trips a day. Now that's just who has to enter the traffic and exit the traffic. That may be high in times in the summertime, and worse in and better in the winter. But I did an analysis of the three developments, one of which is mine, on Old Landing Road, the 1 mile from Walmart down to the adjoining road. In the three developments, there are only one has 110 units, another has 70 units, another has 48 units. And per day, we put in 1,300 entrances and exits a day to Old Landing Road into already heavy traffic. Now the next thing, I am shocked day by day knowing all this when I go to the newspaper. And this is last Sunday's paper. And here's a development. It's a lovely development. It's got everything. It's got good sewer systems. It's got beautiful roads. It's got a beautiful clubhouse. And it happens to be Peninsula Lakes. And Peninsula Lakes, in its advertisement, says, oh, we can get you anywhere. You can. It's an ideal location. You can get to the beaches and to the town of Lewis by coming on Route 24. Okay, so I'm figuring with the tabulations, that's about 5,000 a day trips on the road. The other thing that we may not be realizing, but I'm going to sidebar a minute. I've been invited to serve on the Transportation Planning Committee, the Delaware Public Policy Institute, and DelDOT. And we just went to a meeting a few months ago to write the plan that you submit to the Highway Fund to the federal government to get money. And everybody was exasperated because they gave the fiscal dates that some of these improvements were to have been made. And back to Ms. Deaver's question, the transit thing was to be 2010. They're building it now. Okay, that's typical of transit changes. And a lot of members left the committee because they said, we can't make any more plans. It's just too bad to handle. And a joke in that committee was to call that intersection, that comes out by Lowe's, Dysfunction Junction, because there is no fixing it. They cannot find a way to fix it. Now, added to that, you are not selling to middle-aged people. You're not selling to school-aged children. If you've seen the News Journal recently, you will notice that 68% of all adult children leave the area. Here is our population that you are selling to. This is from Ed Simon, the latest statistics from the census. In Sussex County in 2015, every month, 192 persons are born. In Sussex County, every month, 195 persons die. In Sussex County, every month, 327 persons move here, the average age of 52. Now let's also put that into some other perspective. The average population in 2010 of the percentage of people who are seniors, and I'm not making fun of seniors, I am one, the average percent nationally is 14%. In dense states like Florida and Arizona, it's 16 to 18%. In Sussex County, Delaware, it is 33%. We're the most elder-dense county in the nation, and that's who is coming here. So let's relate that back to traffic. What do we know about traffic? In the newest study, the National Public Safety Report, that just came out at the end of 2015, Delaware is one of only four states where 20% of fatal accidents are caused by senior drivers. Only Delaware, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Idaho have a rate that high. And if you look inside the figures, you will find that most of that carnage is in Sussex County. Also added to that, in that same report, they have now deemed that the used to be the most dangerous driving group cohort was teenage boys. It is now drivers over 80 in the nation is the most dangerous cohort of drivers.
Is it still men?
Is it still men?
Of course not.
No, because the cohort above 80 is predominantly women because we live longer than you do.
George, you're part of that statistic, I'm thinking.
That's why we have our meetings during the day. Old people shouldn't drive at night, right, Mike?
Well, nor do you have enough handicap spots, by the way, that's reflective of your population. Okay, that's another whole issue. So what we are doing is we are putting lesser qualified drivers on the road in terrible traffic situations. Route 24, for example, Old Landing Road, and all of us who live there can't get out anyway but Route 24. No new roads have been built. We've had 24 and 16. That's what we've had my whole life. No new roads built, no grid systems, everybody having to merge on the road, and traffic is horrible. And it's only going to get worse. I'm here not just to tell you don't allow zoning upgrade of this development, but don't allow upgrade of your comprehensive plan, which you legally have the right to hold them to. Do not allow it for other developments until the transportation problems are fixed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a question for the event. Actually, Mr. President, I actually have a question before you walk away. if I may, because I will tell you that I don't totally disagree, but I was curious, was this addressed for us, or was it addressed for Del Dodd in the state legislature, who's in charge of the roads?
It's for all of you. It's for you because I'm telling you that we have to live with a terrible problem. We're not going to have better roads, even though it's not your responsibility for the roads, but we have to work within that framework.
So the other question I had is that because you are a former, you mentioned, assistant superintendent?
Well, actually, I was director of instruction. Yeah, I was second in command at CAPE, yes.
Okay. Which is, and thank you. I mean, it's a noble, it's wonderful. But I am curious on the numbers because you had made mention to it through your presentation. Do you know what the percent is of children in the Cape District that are quote unquote for no lesser of a description as I am as a transplant versus those that are born and raised here? Do you know what the numbers are?
No, I would only be guessing, but I will tell you anecdotally that even for instance when I was a principal at Shields. And there were 35 employees in the building. There were two of us that were natives.
Okay.
That's only anecdotal. That was true statistic.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
Sorry. My name's William Zach, and I live in Briarwood at 7 Deerfield Drive. To the membership of the council. I come before you to speak on behalf of the residents of Briarwood, residential development adjacent to the Dorman Farm property presently under consideration here for zoning change. Clearly, the Dormans have a right to sell their property to allow for development. Indeed, the present zoning AR1 already assures that by law. However, we as a community oppose rezoning to MRRPC primarily because allowing that urban density would be ostensibly out of keeping with contiguous and nearby residential communities surrounding the parcel on all sides. I refer council to the testimony of William Bidala before planning and zoning several months ago, and here today, I understand someone will be reading it for you, that specifies in detail the unprecedented discrepancy between the densities in all those surrounding communities, including Briarwood, Hart's Landing, Bookhammer Estates, Webb's Landing, the Retreat at Love Creek, and Cedar Grove, and what the Belterre developers are proposing. Also of concern to us is the detrimental ecological impact the development as proposed would have on the already imperiled, nutrient-overloaded waters of Hetty Fisher Glade, bordering the entire parcel to the north, a shallow tributary of Love Creek, and thus Rehoboth Bay. To be built on lands DENREC identified years ago for protection based on their ecological importance. And let me note that in the other two counties of the state, a designation of that sort would rule out development of any kind by law. It's only in Sussex County that anything can be built on that kind of designated territory. Belterre proposes to clear, and this may have dropped slightly given their shift in what they're building, the latest plan which they just proposed. But in the original, the clearing, and this goes to Mr. Cole's questions of them about the tree cover and parceling, but by their own admission, the initial plan, half of the property is forested. They planned to clear 37 acres, which is nearly 70% of the forested buffer protecting Hetty Fisher Glade. A thoroughly irresponsible idea given the fact that science has determined that forested buffer is the best protection from pollution and nutrient runoff into waterways. My wife and I have been able to reach approximately two-thirds of the homeowners in Briarwood. Every one of those we've canvassed, many of whom have sent letters to P&Z and to you to this effect, oppose this zoning change, believing as we do that the increase in traffic on our roads, again, this number's slightly down, but their own estimate, 3,000 trips a day from their own single development, will negatively affect our quality of life, profoundly exacerbating traffic woes already plaguing the area, to be detailed momentarily, and risk delays in response times for fire and emergency services because they have to travel these crowded roads, the latter no small matter to an aging population that has already seen a number of local fires burned buildings to the ground before fire services could effectively intervene. Incidentally, referencing Mr. Cole's question about urban, most cities have on-site permanent fire staff. We have volunteer fire services. This is not a city. And they're traveling on these completely overcrowded roads, and they have to get to their equipment on those roads, and then they have to travel to the roads. And every fire that I've seen in the last 3 years has destroyed the property entirely, several of them virtually moving on to other buildings before volunteer services could get to them and protect from larger conflagrations. Let me get back where I was here. Higher density property in Belterre under our MRRPC can be as little as 10 feet apart, significantly increases the risk of more catastrophic conflagration. It should be noted that one of the primary justifications of MRRPC's allowance of urban density is, quote, the convenient extension of public services, unquote, a circumstance that clearly does not obtain in this case. Here, volunteer fire personnel who must travel the same few crowded roads to get to their trucks and equipment, and alarming increases in traffic snarl and gridlock on but three, count them, road corridors, Route 1, 24, and 9, render the applicant's request for MRRPC designation inappropriate. Nothing requires that council approve the spate of MRRPC zoning upgrade requests recently coming to it for review. Present and continuing, perhaps now irremediable, infrastructure woes, in fact, should militate against them, broadly speaking. For years now, the parcel-by-parcel nature of Sussex County's zoning and rezoning clown car process has gone on its merry way, producing a kind of death by a thousand cuts for Eastern Sussex residents. We are only now coming to realize, indeed perhaps already too late to remedy the situation for at least a decade or two, that the advocacy of the rights of property owners to sell their lands and developers to build on that land cannot dispense with a concomitant advocacy for the rights of those who purchase those properties. Surely one such right being the new property owner's taxpaying right to expect the prompt and efficient delivery of basic services, services presently and increasingly imperiled in our neck of Eastern Sussex County. County Council would never consider zoning a business enterprise of significant proportions and potential disturbance of the peace in a pre-existing residential area in a semi-rural setting, clogging narrow and antiquated roads and the site with considerable and annoying vehicular traffic, without weighing with care the impact that business enterprise was having on its neighbors, in every likelihood rejecting it if it seemed sufficiently disproportionate and problematic for the broader community. I have seen you, in fact, do just that. Why then should council consider a massively disproportionate residential business venture like Belterre, a business generating 3,000 car trips a day parading by surrounding home sites, any differently? Yet for decades, council has ruled as if residential development in this area could only be an unmixed blessing. Consider what doing so has wrought. Largely unfettered development at or near the beaches in Lewis, Rehoboth, and Dewey, and along the only three routes accessing them, one from the north and south, and 24 and 9 from the east and west, means that from 2001 to 2015, daily traffic counts at 5 points, that is Route 1 and 9, rose from 23,000 to 48,329, more than doubling. At 24 and 1, from 11,000 to 19,000, up nearly 100%. At Old Landing and 1, which is a sort of cul-de-sac street, I mean, it goes down to the bay quite quickly. At Old Landing and 1, from 9,000 to 13,000, up 30%. And at the entrance to Rehoboth Beach, 1 and 1A, from 22,800 to 64,000, up 300% in 15 years. In an article in the most recent Beach Life, Greg Farese, retired city manager of Rehoboth, declared that his former 7-minute commute to City Hall from Sandy Bray, a matter of no more than 3 or 4 miles, has now become a 45-minute one on busy traffic days. How's the following for residential quality of life? In apparent seriousness, he recommends getting back to one's home by 9 a.m. from all car errands if one wishes to avoid the risk of significant delays. Nor is the situation going to get any better anytime soon. Over the weekend, I did a back-of-the-envelope inventory of residential subdivisions in active development on 9 and 24 and the back roads feeding directly into them between Route 1 and Route 5, a north-south connector between 9 and 24, approximately 5 miles west of the Beach Highway. In that small pocket of eastern Sussex, my count stopped at 32. There are 32 developments in active development, all sorts of flags, advertising sales, and so on. The impact, somewhere, conservatively speaking, between 15 and 30,000 or more new car trips per day in the near future, feeding into 2 single-lane corridors each way. Nancy mentioned how all these streets have only one entrance and eventually funnel into 24 or 9. Roads antiquated and already overstrained, and at best a decade and more from any major road improvements widening them to 4 lanes. In my survey, I noted that even turn lanes into these new developments were a rarity. Yet I'd be willing to wager that every developer successfully assured council that traffic would not appreciably be affected by their projects. We can no longer afford to make policy decisions in such a piecemeal fashion. With only one way in and out of nearly every one of these projects, all traffic funnels into the ever-worsening bottlenecks on 24 and 9, the only venues to the beach resorts, restaurants, retail outlets, cultural and health amenities current property owners fully expected to utilize and enjoy when they bought and relocated here. According to Councilman Cole's figures, 5 to 7 million people visit the Delaware coast in season, more than visit all the Hawaiian islands in an entire year. Nearly half of them, in all likelihood, those coming from Annapolis, DC, and Baltimore metropolitan regions, on 9 and 24. We're facing an imminent crisis that business as usual will no longer accommodate. If the annoyances and delays getting to and leaving the resorts get too irksome, visitors will find other alternatives for their vacation travel, damaging retail volume in the region, causing a general decline in property values for those who paid a premium not so many years ago to acquire property when the living environment here was decidedly more attractive. As both a recent Cape Gazette editorial and Councilman Cole's recent remarks in an interview with WBOC argue, Eastern Sussex is rapidly reaching functional capacity, and civic and county leaders must start thinking more broadly about quality of life issues for those who have already resettled here when making development decisions. With yet more traffic volume to be expected, emergency health services and police and fire response could well cost lives that in a less congested environment might well have readily been saved. Given these circumstances, approval of urban density for any local residential projects in the area seems reckless. Regarding the ecological component of this issue, though we do not speak for the entire Briarwood community, but only for ourselves in this, my wife and I share DENREC's recommendation in the preliminary land use survey, the PLUS, and as well the recent editorial stance in the Cape Gazette that the ideal route to be encouraged for this property is permanent preservation. Almost half the dormant property, nearly the entire forested portion of the plot, lies, as I said earlier, in an area DENREC identified years ago for protection as land of unusual ecological importance, where development should be denied. As Chris Basin, the director of the Center for the Inland Bays, ominously declared in a recent interview published in the Cape Gazette, development of the few remaining parcels like this in our vicinity will likely spell doom for the Inland Bays watershed recovery. Love Creek and Hetty Fisher Glade, bordering the northern perimeter of the parcel, are already among the most polluted and nutrient-overloaded waterways in this watershed. The extent of the deforestation envisioned in Belterre proposal and the creation in its place of such extensive areas of impervious surface, roofs, roads, driveways, parking lots, public buildings, and pump station facilities assures even worse nutrient runoff into these creeks and the bay beyond. If we ever hope to make progress on the legally binding mandate, it's a legally binding mandate to reduce nutrient loads in the bays by 40%, developments in locations like this one must be off limits or at least scaled back with the greatest care and regularly monitored to ensure compliance with pollution control legislation and existing regulation. It should be recalled in this regard that even AR1 zoning designates that modest housing development should be in balance with, quote, watershed protections, water resources, forest areas, and scenic value if responsible stewardship of the land is to be fostered. This next seems important to me given the assurances from the developers of how ecologically sensitive they are. It is not at all a heartening sign of anything resembling this level of stewardship and environmental regard that the developer declined DENREC's plus request to allow a state agency site visit to review the parcel's features. Nor does the developer record any response in the plus document to DENREC's expressed alarm regarding the number of lots in the developer's plan so near Hetty Fisher Glade and contiguous wetlands that coastal storms will certainly flood said properties with some regularity, this is from DENREC now, and that the predicted sea level rise in the near lifetime of the project will thereafter render those homes uninhabitable. The developer likewise flatly denied DENREC's urging to expand the forested buffers bordering the creek from 50 to 100 feet. With regard to the total maximum daily load regulations, pollution control strategy, and the Delaware Nutrient Reduction Law, the tools designed to reduce nutrient loads in the inland bays by 40%, the developer has blithely assured regulators in his plus document response that he will meet his obligations in this regard. But here's the rub. He does not bother to specify in any verifiable way just how he proposes to do so, how he will reliably measure success or failure over time and with consistency, what financial responsibility for remediation and penalties he will accept should he fail to do so, nor finally how ongoing compliance will be monitored and at whose expense, how mandated 40% reductions in nutrient load to contiguous waters can be achieved by a 70% reduction in forest cover and a massive increase in impervious surfaces strains credibility. The assurance seems at best wildly overconfident, at worst cynically preposterous. For these reasons and more, to approve a development of this scope and density on such an environmentally sensitive parcel of land, home I might add to a number of rare state endangered species, would be an ill-considered purchase of a pig in a poke. Should council approve any development on the parcel, even AR1, it should require the developer to set aside in escrow a sum to sufficient to monitor baseline and subsequent nutrient loading at various points on site, a sum moreover large enough to accomplish remediation and pay criminal penalty for violation of Delaware law should the developer's assurances prove misleading. Stipulations like this in every zoning instance, including infrastructure improvement levies, might well put needed brakes on the runaway pace of development, threatening the well-being of us all. And let me note finally that what I just said by way of setting aside in escrow sums to monitor, check, and remediate when environmental damage has been done is really nothing but a token, because once it's occurred, there is no remediation. There isn't a large enough sum of money. This is not BP. So if you got, you know, however, $100,000 from a developer to monitor this environmental issue over the long term and assure the public that indeed their promises are being fulfilled, that would be a gesture. But once the damage is done, it can't be remediated. And we won't be able to remediate the inland bays. So for those reasons, I would argue, as Nancy did, that it's not just this particular development, but any development that wants an upzoning, given the circumstances we're presently living with, is inviting disaster. We already may be beyond the point where we're not going to have a quality of life that's diminished simply because the convergence. We live here in a cul-de-sac with a couple of roads. It's becoming a parking lot, and it will continue to do so. 32 new developments in probably, what, 2 or 3 square miles, maybe, of land. And they haven't even entered the roadways yet. So thank you for your
time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker, I see someone blue.
I have a copy of this. Should I submit it?
Sure. Yes. Mr. President, before the next gentleman comes up, may I just one comment? And this is not to take away any of the comments at all, because I would be very agreeable to most, if not all. But it was mentioned to Mr. Cole's point, because it was in the testimony, regarding the amount of visitors that we have in this area as it relates to Hawaii. And one that has lived in Hawaii, and I'm not advocating, because there is a lot of traffic, it's a big problem over in Hawaii. But I wanted to go to the website on Hawaii.com. It's from, or Hawaii.gov, so it is from the state of Hawaii. Their annual visitors, both domestic and in international, per the air travel, is over 74, almost 75 million, just for the record. Because I know it was mentioned 5 or 7 million. I just, per their website, effective 2014 numbers, it's almost 75 million air travel to the state of Hawaii, which is a little different than what was mentioned. And I know you were referencing his comments, and I know that.
Not only that, but so, are you saying also that the 5 to 7 million that are visiting here are not 5 to 7 million?
I'm not refuting that. What I'm stating is that the Hawaii numbers were referenced based on Mr. Cole's comment earlier, and I remember that.
Maybe I was wrong, because I was about 20 years. I went to a conference in Hawaii, and a guy with a ponytail and a guy who was a county administrator got up and said something about 7 to 5 million. Maybe they said 75 million.
Could very well. Like, I think for the public record and for our public in this county, no comparison. I'm just saying our residents, our visitors, as compared to Hawaii. I just want to make sure
it's a horrendous trip.
Clear.
I'm never going back to Hawaii.
Just want to make sure it's very clear.
Sir, you'll give us your name and address and be sure and sign in, too, please. Sure.
Thank you for the clarification.
Island? Which island?
I can't remember.
Anyways.
Good afternoon. My name is Greg Cordell. I live at 19720 Bernard Drive in the retreat at Love Creek. I am presenting this testimony on behalf of Bill Badala, the retreat's HOA president, who was unable to attend the meeting today. Before I get started, I just want to note that I will try to present numbers that were given earlier on the number of units change, but the change, it will not affect the theme or the arguments that I'm about to present. Bill, I, and others in our community have significant concerns and oppose the change of zone request 1800 involving the Dorman Farm parcel from AR1 Agricultural Residential District to MR Medium Residential. The developers of this project, Beltaire, a residential planned community, have proposed building 378, now 333, residential units on 124 gross acres, or 3.1 units, now 2.7, which is a modest change overall, per acre, with a density of 4.3 units on one-third of the property. And their request for rezoning must be evaluated against whether the newly zoned property would fit in with the surrounding properties. We maintain that 3.1 or now 2.7 units per acre does not fit in at all. There is no other community that now exists or is already approved in the nearby vicinity that comes close to that level of density. In addition, the proposed development is adjacent to parcels of land that are currently zoned AR1, and there is an elevated risk that this development, if approved, would create a precedent for future rezoning applications with high levels of density. We view all of these concerns, these issues, with extreme concern. What is at stake here is the vision of what this part of the county will look like in the future. Under the comprehensive plan, any analysis of this proposed project should be expansive. Not only should you consider the use of the properties immediately surrounding the Dorman Farm, but also those in nearby communities and land within a boundary of Route 24, Plantation Road, and Robinsonville Road. As the comparison will show, a dense urban-style collection of communities does not exist in these areas. In fact, the current developments and proposed buildouts support lower density to preserve the enviable quality of life that we have in Sussex County. The proposed project is also adjacent to a new school and the future headquarters of the State Police Department. These additional buildings, particularly the school, will naturally increase traffic in the area. Putting this sprawling housing development near these other organizations will add unnecessary traffic and safety stress to an already stressed situation. In addition, traffic congestion could impede state police from responding to emergency situations. Now let's look at the larger area. Since Belterre would touch Hetty Fisher Glade and by extension Love Creek, it is appropriate to compare the density of the proposed development to other communities adjacent to Love Creek between Route 24 and Robinsonville Road. These communities going upstream from Route 24 include Hart's Landing, Briarwood, Webb's Landing, the retreat at Love Creek, and the approved but yet to be built Love Creek Landing. The average density of these five communities, all of significant size, is about 1.25 units per acre. Belterre is now proposed at 2.7, which will be more than twice the density than the average of these five communities. Hart's Landing, which is the only community that borders 24, has the highest density ratio of 1.73 with 144 homes on about 83 acres. It is zoned AR1 with an RPC overlay. By way of comparison, if this zoning and density level were applied to Belterre, the number of housing units would only be 212, which is now 36% less than the current proposal of 333 units. That's taking the highest density that we could use. Just north of Hart's Landing is Briarwood, a community of 72 lots on approximately 80 acres with a density of about 0.9 houses per acre. Approximately one-third of this community's lots will border the proposed development. These residents will experience density in their backyards that is more than three times than that of their own community. If I lived in Briarwood, I would be very concerned about the impact of a city-style development on my property values. Next on a journey upstream is Webb's Landing, the smallest community with 35 homes, each on approximately 1 acre of land. Across the creek from Webb's Landing is the retreat at Love Creek. I live in a retreat, and I appreciate that the Planning and Zoning Commission and County Council previously approved this development with its low density and significant buffers. That forward-thinking decision has often drawn praise from many of my neighbors who are concerned with the Love Creek environment. The retreat has 161 lots on 139 acres. That's a density of only 1.16 homes sites per acre. That's a little more than one-third of the density of the proposed Belterre project. Adjacent to Webb's Landing and across from the retreat is Love Creek Landing. This approved community will have 213 lots on 163 acres for a density of 1.31. When the initial development with AR1 zoning was approved in 2009, Mr. Johnson commented that it was a superior design because it had a density of only 1.12 acres per acre, while maintaining approximately 102 acres of open space and 60% of the forested land. At the same time, he recommended that the multifamily dwellings component of the development be denied because it was not consistent with the character of the surrounding property and the underlying AR1 zoning of the property. The commission did allow the developer to come back and include single-family housing units as a replacement to the multifamily dwellings. Today we propose that the commission apply the same logic in this application and deny the rezoning request. To be all-inclusive in this analysis, we should also compare the communities and open land on the west side of Route 24 near the proposed development. I've already outlined the density of Hart's Landing and Briarwood, which are significantly less dense than the proposed development. In 2014, Saddle Ridge, with approved MRRPZ zoning, will have 81 homes on 37.5 acres when built. This results in a density level of 2.16 units per acre. It should be noted that the original request is for 118 units, and was significantly reduced for the final approval. Once again, the density of 3.06, now 2.7, for Belterre far exceeds the density level of this community, which is located on the main road. Also, in the surrounding area between Plantations Road, Route 24, and Robinsonville Road, is a significant amount of AR1 zone land, in fact, hundreds of acres, most of which is farmland. There's also a small development called Cedar Grove, currently being built for 25 one-acre-plus plots on a total acreage of 27 acres. Once again, the allowable density levels are significantly lower than the proposed development. In brief, the proposed rezoning for Belterre is not consistent with the current comprehensive plan and the surrounding area. And there is a risk of creating a domino effect if the county approves this rezoning request and allows this level of density. In the future, owners of current AR1 could leverage that Belterre zoning, the Belterre zoning, as a precedent for additional zoning changes and propose higher levels of density. What is envisioned and outlined in the comprehensive plan could be replaced with a patchwork of urban-like developments. A change of rezoning to allow high density for Belterre is a treacherous step in the wrong direction. In 2006, state environmental official designated nearly 1,000 acres around Love Creek as an official natural area. The objective was to permanently protect the land with a conservation easement or natural preserve. But this state decision is being undermined by the Belterre project because about 50 acres of the development is located in a designated natural area. As Delaware residents, we urge you to enforce state regulations. It is time that environmental protection becomes a priority and enforcement should be applied now. Proper development and the density level of future communities are important issues. They ensure the quality of life that Sussex County's residents enjoy now and we hope in the future. They are the issues that you constantly hear county residents mention to you every day: traffic congestion, safety, environmental risks, demands on infrastructure, roads, hospitals, police, etc. With increased density, there will naturally be more traffic, and the developer has estimated that there could be up to 3,000 trips per day as a result of this development. We worry about that number and whether it may even be a low figure. More traffic congestion is definitely a quality of life issue, but with it comes increased traffic safety concerns. We cannot ignore that more developments and more density increase these safety concerns. Yes, infrastructure improvements are required and necessary, but they must be aligned with reasonable size developments to be effective. The county can influence the level of future traffic by not increasing density and only allowing less than or equal to levels of what is currently zoned and incorporated in the comprehensive plan. In addition, we are all aware that Love Creek and its tributary, Hetty Fisher Glade, have pollution issues. Love Creek and its tributaries are currently listed as impaired under the Federal Clean Water Act for bacteria and nutrients. Accordingly, the county must promote sound conservation to remedy the condition, and this can only happen by limiting